Hey, what if you took a job as a CISO and found out that your predecessor had been reporting 99% patching, but that was only the Windows endpoints and you were really 300 days behind? What would you do about it? Stick around. I got an expert who's going to show you exactly how he handled that. In the time it takes to copy, paste, and hit send on ChatGPT, you can suffer a data leak. True visibility and control over your data has never been more important than it is today. Forcepoint helps companies fight back with quick detection and real-time response to data risk. Forcepoint's self-aware data security platform powers intelligent data discovery and classification, intuitive risk prioritization, and reliable exposure remediation. Know your data. Adapt to risk. Protect at scale, and securely enable AI adoption with Forcepoint. Hello, and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy, and today I got a special presentation for you. Ross Young and I were at InfoSec World this past week, and Ross gave a presentation on patch or perish, how I was able to take 300 days of patching cycles down to 30. It's pretty amazing, and it has the added benefit of being true. And so listen to this and watch this if you can, because we're going to put the slides that he presented onto our YouTube video so you can follow along visually. If you're subscribing to us using the normal podcast channels, wonderful. But if you haven't watched us on YouTube, go ahead and subscribe there as well, and you'll get a little bit more out of this particular episode. So here we go, and here's Ross.
Who here thinks that vulnerabilities are a big issue for cyber and IT today? Oh, a little bit. How would you guys like to take a program that's patching in 300 plus days and get it to less than 30 days? Does that sound like a good goal? All right, so that was my experience when I was a CISO. I walked in, and on day one, they were reporting to the executive board and the leadership team, we were 99% patched. Sounds pretty good, right? Guess what happened? I pulled behind those numbers a little bit. It was only the Windows patching, and they were telling we were patched on everything, and they had only shown the Windows patching. And so we ran this little tool called Qualys. And we found out it was like 350 days and we had Oracle 9 and all sorts of bad things you don't want to see. So, oh my gosh, what do you do? So now just to hear a little bit, you know, my background is I spent 10 and a half years at CIA. I was a nation state hacker. I broke into banks for 4 years. I built DevOps programs. I went to Capital One. I worked at Caterpillar. And currently, I do CISO Tradecraft, which is trying to teach you the lessons, the tools, the templates, all those things, so you can change these programs yourself. So let's just start a little bit and see how bad this problem is before I give you the solution. If we look at vulnerabilities over the past few years, it's getting worse and worse and worse. In 2020, the number of published CVEs, 18,500. Okay, that's a lot of work, especially if you're, you know, patching at 300 days at that point in time. Compare that to 2024, well over double, 40,000 CVEs being published. That means you have more things to fix. It takes more time. You have to validate those fixes. Don't break your stuff. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. Just look at the annual growth rate. And just look in the first quarter of 2025, 38% growth rate. Now, raise your hand if you got 38% more developers to do patching in your organization this year. No one, right? But yet, if we're trying to hold our service level of agreement of we're going to patch in 15 or 30 days on all our internet-facing sites, how much more challenging did that get? All right, let's take a look at the Verizon data breach report. If you look at it and say, what are the top three ways you're going to be breached according to last year's data? credential abuse, phishing, and exploitation of vulnerabilities. Out of these threes, which one looks like it's increasing the most? Vulnerabilities. So where do you think we should start putting all of our defenses? Because this is where we're going to get hit in the face. Right? Okay. Now, if this wasn't bad enough already, AI makes everything more fun, right? So, according to the UK National Security Center, AI will most certainly make it worse. The most significant AI cyber development will highly likely come from AI-assisted vulnerability research and exploit development. So, if it wasn't bad enough, they're going to do it. And some people are, well, this is just theory, Ross. You don't have any data behind that to substantiate, do you? Actually, I do. Some researchers from the University of California, Santa Barbara, and BU basically did a research project where they took something like 800 of the 40,000 vulnerabilities over the last year, and they said, we're going to use AI and we're going to create exploits for these things and do it extremely fast. What percentage do you think they were able to create auto exploits for of just published CVEs? They didn't know the CVEs. They didn't write the CVEs. They just took the data from a published CVE and said, let me build an exploit for that with AI. Anybody want to guess a number? 80%? Any other numbers? Any other guesses? You guys are a little too optimistic. It's actually about 51% of what they're able to weaponize. But just think about this. If you thought you had 30 days before to patch and they can auto-exploit in just hours, that 30-day number is no longer going to be a good SLA. It's not going to work anymore. And they can do this. I think their average cost was $2.77 an exploit. So you're talking about the bad actors, when they start figuring out this PhD research in a year or two, it's going to get a little bit scary. All right. Now what? What do? We just got hit in the face. We got to do something, right? Okay. When I think about any solutions, we have to understand there's different things that we have to come up with an approach. It needs to work from a people perspective, needs to work from a process perspective, needs to work from a tooling perspective, and it needs to comply with regulations or what the, you know, criminals are doing against us, which I call that external environment. So when we put all this together, I call this CISO tradecraft, and this is what G. Mark and I teach all the time. But let's look through some of these things. The first thing we have to do is we have to educate the people. And so what I mean by that is, do the developers actually take any type of training to learn how to write secure code? Something like a secure code warrior, where they learn how to write, you know, validating SQL statements before they're running those things, right? Do they understand how to patch software? And you think it would be simple, but I'll show you in this next slide, they actually get this very, very wrong. And then also they know how to run all of your AppSec tools. So when I was a CISO, or when I was hiring folks and people would come in, the most telling question I would ask to figure out if I was going to have a competent worker for me or not is, say, imagine on day one, a junior developer comes over to you and says, hey, Ross, I need to build a secure website that doesn't get hacked at our bank. What do I need to actually do to secure this website so bad guys can't come in? That's kind of a tricky question. People don't actually know the answers to it. Ask that question. Just think about that question. And what I would tell you is most cybersecurity professionals and developers don't understand the stack. We go through this OSI stack, which I think is garbage. And this is the stack you really need to understand. You have a cloud environment and you can have cloud misconfigs. Then you pick an operating system, whether it's Linux, whether it's Windows, you're building a server. That also has to be patched at that level. Then you have to patch Java, right? If you're going to run a Java web app, you got to have Java. So you install OpenJDK, you install a Java server like Tomcat, and then you actually want it to be a web application. So now you have to install something like Spring or Apache Struts. And then you get to do other things. You get to put libraries in there, like database connectors, JDBC, that's what that is, or JUnit if you want to have unit testing. And then finally, you actually get to write your Java code. And so what I find developers don't understand is they think patching is at one layer only, or they just look at one tool. Let's call it the Qualys tool for vuln management, and they're missing, I have to do all this software composition analysis. I have to do DAST. I have to do SAS. I have to do all these things. And if you do not do all these things and you do not patch all these levels and layers, you will have vulnerabilities go bad. That's the first thing. Train your developers. Next, we got to get accountability. And so here was one of the things that I did. I went to each of the division managers who reported to the CIO, and I would create a simple metric like this to hold the line. So you would say, okay, what is our average age of vulnerabilities coming from something like Qualys, something like Checkmarks, something like Web Inspect, something like Sneak, something like Wiz? And you start to check how many vulns you have that are past your SLA, greater than 30 days. And what is the average age of them when you put all those together? Now, I know some people may be metrics Nazis and say, well, our numbers of servers is so dynamic. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. There's different metrics you can use. But the most important thing that we want to do is we want to have a metric we can hold someone accountable to every month where we say, here's what the number is. Is it getting better every month? Look at the trend line. Is it meeting our goal? Look at the goal. And if not, what are we going to do about it? And this is how we drive the accountability. Now, you don't just say, you guys suck, your numbers are terrible. You actually give them tips of how to move the numbers. So your next slide after you just said this is bad should say, here are the three vulns that if you fixed would most move your numbers. And so you fill out four of these five columns. The only column you don't fill out is this red one called remediation date. Who fills that column out? The developers. And then you hold them accountable to when they said they're going to patch those numbers. If you don't hold accountability, nothing good is going to come from that. So, how do we do this? I can write a policy that says patch in 30 days. Is anybody even going to read the policy? Probably not, right? Let's not fool ourselves. Who's reading all these policies that we write? Maybe somebody, maybe the auditors, but not the developers are not reading all that stuff, right? And okay, what about if I put in my cyber strategy? I have a slide, right? People going to care now? Probably not. You know, they'll attend the meeting and then they'll go to their day. And that's the culture that we built. What really changes is gamification in alignment with incentives. So when I was the CISO, I went to the CIO and I said, here's what we're going to do. My yearly bonus is based on do we hit our patching numbers. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars based on do we hit this number. Said, no problem, you got it. Then I said, you know what my next thing is? I can't actually do this goal by myself. I don't have hands on keyboard to patch everything in the whole organization. Totally get it. I would like the same goal from every IT manager in the whole IT department. Guess what? When it's October and hundreds of people see they will only get a meets and not get a exceeding or a superior bonus and they're losing tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars, guess what's going to be a priority for the organization? Patching. You better believe it. So now when it's new features versus patching and I see my year-end bonus just fizzling away, I will freaking move heaven and earth to make sure I get that bonus, right? You guys a little incentivized by that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what you do. You take that exact same thing and you show it every month and you put everybody on this board. So we had a CIO with six direct reports, and we ranked and we stacked them and we showed them every single month. And we showed them, here are the three things you need to go and fix. And here's when you tell me you're going to fix them. And if you do not hit these numbers, no bonus for you. But if you do hit them, let's go out and freaking celebrate. That accountability drives change. So now we got the people and the piece fixed. What about the process? One of the things I think we do in cyber that's really stupid is we focus on one CVE, when I think we all know there's thousands of CVEs hitting our organization. And I see people taking pictures. My name is Ross Young. I will put all these slides on LinkedIn. Connect with me. I will send them all to you. So don't feel like I need a cheap little thing and I can't see the font. I'll give all the slides away with all the links. But if you take vuln management and consider it as a process, what are the 10, 15 steps we have to do? And how do we get really good at it so we don't keep living in this crap process? That's how we change the organization. Not the onesie, twosie CVEs, the process. Look at this example here. What's the process? A tool has to spot a vulnerability. Maybe every 2 hours, Qualys scans our infrastructure and comes back and says, hey, you got a vulnerability. Then after that, we actually have to know who is the right developer who has to go fix that. Otherwise, we're playing like a Scooby-Doo witch hunt to figure out, you know, who did it. And then you have to go through all of the steps until you actually push out a patch, make sure that was successfully deployed. And you start with this average time. What is the average time in days or minutes it takes for us to complete these steps? And then you call your council of nerds together, right? You get someone from the app team, someone from the database team, someone from the network team. All of these people who've been around a long time, who know the process and the systems better than you do. And you say, we're going to wave a magic wand. And I want you to tell me how fast we could get each of these steps to in a dream world. If we were to totally just destroy the current process and make it ideal, how fast could we get it? And you're going to see, well, maybe I could go from 120 minutes or 120 days down to 10. Or maybe it's this amount. And now you can actually measure the efficiency of each of these steps. Does that mean I actually need to go and fix all 20 steps to really improve the organization? Don't do that. That's stupid. Don't do it. What you want to do is you want to look for where the biggest things are. Look over here. We have two. One that's 2,000 minutes called perform regression testing, and another one that's 1,000 minutes called schedule a change approval process. And so maybe your change approval is a once-a-week meeting. If it's not in the meeting, no change for you. Come back next week. Dumb, slow, bureaucratic. How might we put that into a GitHub workflow where who needs to approve it? All right, let's just have two people click a button in GitHub and we don't have to wait for next week's meeting. So when you start to look through these things, one of the things I like to do is create a Pareto chart. And what it does is it shows where's the 80% of things you need to do that actually fix everything. And so now when you look at this, if I just fix two of the 15 steps, everybody's patching gets better. Does that sound like a desirable outcome? Yeah, we don't have to tell everybody, shame on you for not patching because we didn't give you the tools to do it. We didn't fix a bureaucratic process that's screwing you over every vulnerability you're trying to patch. We got to think at a strategic level. We got to use things like lean process improvement to do this. All right, tooling. Now, I've seen a lot of people say, we're going to fix all the vulns. And I've seen a lot of organizations take different approaches to say, well, how do I prioritize? I think probably one of the more better approaches is these attack graphs, where you say, put all my vulns and all the different views in the one view, and show me how the bad guys win. How do they get to the crown jewels? Because if I can stop that attack path, that's really key. And it's important because a lot of times you may say, well, we only patch highs and criticals. Screw the lows. But if I can string together a bunch of lows and mediums and get to the crown jewels, and you're not patching that, well, you're going to figure out what the cost of a ransomware payment or a DDoS on your site is real quick. So I think these are super helpful. Another thing that I would highly, highly tell organizations to look at that I don't see enough is GitHub Advanced Rule Sets. Raise your hand if you're using this or have any idea what this is. Oh my goodness. I want each of you to look at this because this is probably one of the best things you can do. So let's say you've been holding that accountability line and making people's bonuses and other things all tied in and incentivized, and you finally get to 30 days and you want to move on to other important initiatives. You got to stop the AI, you know, data leaks. You got to do something with zero trust or whatever the buzzword of the day is. What you're going to want to do is get out of a manual process of having to go notify and bug developers left and right to say, go patch your crap and put it into a pipeline. And the easiest way to do that is with pipelines in the source code. So what you can do in GitHub is there's this concept called rule sets. Before anybody can merge code into the master branch, they have to have zero higher critical findings. That is your quality gate check from now on. Now, I would say we will not be 100% draconian around this. We actually created an Active Directory group of the deputy CIOs who could allow a manual bypass. Well, Ross, why would you want to allow, you know, critical vulns to go to prod? That just sounds stupid. Well, if my developers are sitting at 20 vulns on an application today and they patch and fix it and they get down to one critical vuln, which of these two systems would you prefer to be internet facing? 20 vulns or one? I prefer one. So I'm going to allow that manual bypass by the deputy CIOs who are, you know, approving that release to go forward. Not an intern to make that change. Someone who's accountable, someone who has the authority to make that decision happen. And here's what it looks like. When those things come in and you have things coming in, you can say, we're going to block that code. We're going to, maybe we're just going to notify. We're going to, you know, change and give fixes. We might even start to do this, not just for vulnerabilities, but what about regulation changes? Are you allowed to push a legal code that violates GDPR, the EU AI Act or CCPA or HIPAA or whatever your regulation is? Or do we need to now go and start looking at code for regulation? So what I think we're going to see is we're going to see a shift that patching vulns in 30 days is just not good enough. And at the same time, we know we can't get all of our vendors to patch overnight. We know people need holidays and weekends off, so we're not going to work them every hour of every day. But we got to do better. And I'll just give you two examples over here. I think we're going to need a much more complex stack to keep our applications safe. So when someone has a vulnerability, let's call it log4j, on an internet-facing system that's really problematic, does the WAF stop that vulnerability even if the website is vulnerable? Second, how are we stopping bots from coming out and hitting us? If they have to go through a CAPTCHA and they have to be, you know, already a customer, those little impediments can be the difference between a viral thing that everybody's just using Shodan to target every website with log4j. They can't quite reach your site. Next, DDoS, load balancers, all of these things just really, really powerful. Having MFA with conditional access. The one here I think we don't see enough on are the kind of closer to the bottom, application detection and response. It used to be called a RASP, runtime application self-protection. It's a it's a better WAF. It's a WAF that runs on the application. So now I have a WAF on the application and a WAF at the network layer. I kind of have two lines of defense even when my app isn't patched. It's going to give me more breathing room in these times. And then Canary tokens. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but most of the big FANG companies are running these and they're catching a lot of things that other things don't. And it's that flip of the script. I know you usually hear, oh, cyber has to be perfect. Developers have to be perfect. Well, if the bad actors have to be perfect too, that's tricky for them. And when we have, you know, bad credentials and other things that they may want to abuse, and we use that to say, danger, danger, Will Robinson, we have something bad, super, super helpful to know and start blocking. The other thing I think we're also going to see in this space that's changing is vibe coding. And just take the example of if I have 200 vulnerabilities today, and each vuln takes me 30 minutes to go and fix, I need 100 hours from that developer to go fix that 200 vulns. How many developers just have 100 hours? They're just twiddling their thumbs. They're ready to give you. Probably no one. But if I can use ChatGPT or I can use something like Claude to fix my vulns in 10 minutes and it comes back with that response, and then I can put it through some type of test script to make sure it didn't break anything. Well, now my patching went from 100 hours to 30 minutes. That's how we're going to get better. That's how we're going to get faster. And we're going to see this change in ways we haven't seen. So today, we use software libraries, and I may have 100 dependencies in my web application. What if I could write all those from scratch just by asking ChatGPT, and I didn't have external dependencies? Well, now I could control what's patched a lot easier than saying, well, I'm on the latest version, which only has bad versions. Things like that is where we're going to have to actually pitch and change. So I'll leave this with you. I think there's a lot of really good opportunities, but make sure you think about how do we change things from a people perspective, from a process perspective, from a tooling perspective, because we don't have a bright future if we don't. The bad actors are going to get faster at exploiting more and more things. And these are the techniques we need to do if we're going to shift to patching in hours and getting within that 30-day time frame.